We're from Street Games, a national charity. Our charity exists because we strongly believe that sport and physical activity has got a massive role to play in addressing the issues that young people and families who live in our poorest communities across the UK face. And we also, whilst as a charity, we want to challenge some of those issues positively through sport, we also want to close the gap that exists between our most affluent and less affluent young people and families across the UK. So that's why we exist.
Brilliant. Thanks, Robbo. So we're here today to talk about this idea of a deficit mindset and how we steer away from it in our work. So there's four of us on this little conversation today, so we'll just do some introductions. So you've already heard from Robbo, but do you want to just introduce yourself a little bit more, Robbo?
Yeah, so I'm Paul Roberts. I work for Street Games. I've always worked in sport, and I've always worked with underserved communities and young people who face disadvantage that live within those communities. And I've been with Street Games for about 10 years, 11 years.
Brilliant, thank you. Lauren, come to you next.
Yeah, so Lauren Thomas, so obviously work for Street Games. Similarly, always been super passionate about community sport, young people, the opportunities that it brings to lives that like myself who've been in one of those communities and faced many challenges, but how much opportunity it's given me moving forward. That's why I love Street Games and why we do what we do. And I guess that's what we're going to discuss today.
Lovely. Thanks, Lauren. Lee, come to you next.
Lee Williams, worked for Street Games as well. I feel as if I'm going to copy everything everybody said. Worked in the sport for development sector for the last however long. I'm not giving my age away. I did have my jab yesterday, so that fairly gives you an idea of how old I am. But yeah, love what I do, passionate about community sport, community development, and yeah, looking forward to the conversation.
Brilliant. Thanks, Lee. And then just to round it up, my name's Claire Lane. I've been at Street Games for, nearly 10 years. Same as everybody else. Love sport, young people, communities, the power of it. Come from a kind of youth work and education background, moving into sport. So yeah, looking forward to the chat today. So Lauren's going to kick us off and then we'll see where we go with our conversation. So Lauren, over to you.
Yeah, I guess for me, Claire, when this topic was kind of thrown out there for this podcast, I guess I really kind of had to reflect in terms of the way that I think we even communicate sometimes. I think as a fundamental, before we even do anything within sport, within communities, around this kind of starting with kind of solution focus, not from a deficit. I think that really comes down to a communication a lot of the time, and that's the fundamental for me. I know within Street Games, we try to steer away from using things like challenge. We use positively disrupt, which already puts that kind of spin on it. That word hard to reach. I know we've always kind of cringed a little when that's been used. So yeah, for me, when this initial sort of topic came around, for me, that real fundamental of just how we communicate was really key for me, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Lauren. And I attended a asset-based community development jamboree a few months back. And Cormac Russell, if anyone's never heard of him, he's massive in the asset-based community development world. And he's really kind of inspiring. And the approaches that he has to working with these communities is kind of very similar to ours, really. Identifying the positives and the real assets, whether they're people, places, skill sets, whatever that may be. And something that he mentioned around that term hard to reach really stuck with me. And he said, these communities, they're not hard to reach, they're just easy to ignore. Sometimes it's quite hard to engage people when you start with that negative and point out all the flaws and stuff. So yeah, that's something that stuck with me, especially over the last few months, is that phrase, they're not hard to reach, just easy to ignore, really.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we share our experience and our reflection when this topic first came out, and just listen to what you and Lauren were saying there, Lee, is I think in particular when we talk about, you know, we use the expression disadvantaged communities, you know, communities of poverty, deprivation, high levels of deprivation, industry sectors, whether it's sport, youth, arts, community development, whatever, we educate ourselves on the deficit first. We educate ourselves on what is wrong with these communities, what's not going so well for their communities. And it's not wrong to educate ourselves in that space, but we can almost become too obsessed about it, that you're just constantly focused in on it. And my experience sometimes is when we hone in on problems, I question how much good does that do to the community when external professionals, or, you know, professionals that exist through local authorities, public sector bodies, charities, whatever, hone in on problems and try and come with solutions and do things to those communities for those problems. It's always kind of been a bit of a question mark in my head, particularly with sport physical activity. You know, there's not enough going on there. We need to do this. This isn't happening over there. Let's make sure that this happens. And quite often, you know, because of the years that I guess collectively between ourselves and the rest of our organisation, when we put ourselves in the shoes of communities, it can become quite suffocating. You know, we got this, we got that, we can give you this, we can give you that. And we've designed this and we designed that. And then 2 or 3 years later, we see things that actually weren't that bad in terms of design from the outside, but they don't really exist beyond the injection of time by professionals into those communities. You see it all the time. We probably all know a few ourselves. So it is an interesting topic, because it's great that we can educate ourselves on the problems, the deficit that exists within these communities. But I think what was really interesting about this topic is, and it's something we do talk about quite often, is what actually exists in these communities that is a good thing? What is it that we could work with and empower and equip these communities with so that things last longer? So there's a sense of belonging. There's a sense of, you know, look what we've done. It is a lot of, to us, and well, I think to quite often it's probably seen as thinking outside the box. It's not really. It's just quite simple engagement and empowerment with community groups. So it is dead interesting. And yeah, this is going to be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, and the positive as well that you spoke about there, I'm just thinking about myself growing up. I would never see myself as deprived or, you know, come from an area of poverty when I was young and growing up. And that's a massive positive. You know, I probably would have been that, you know, if somebody wanted to put a label on me. But actually, I didn't see that. I didn't feel that. And surely that is a positive. And we spoke around, you know, the fit and fed and calling it that. And actually, what does that mean to communities and to people? You know, is there a stigma around it? Is there not? And actually, the massive positive here is that a lot of these communities don't see them as problems. That's just the way we live, and that's where we're from, and that's how we brought up. And I feel really proud about that as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point in there, like what everyone's making around the whole, like, doing it to a community or a group of people. Oh, it does my head in. Like, how many of us can give an example of something, and we're probably all guilty of it ourselves, of parachuting in, here we go, this is what's going to solve everything, and then disappearing off again to do it somewhere else. And it's not sustainable, is it, in terms of the behaviour change that we're talking about here, the community development, but thinking about, or how can we support a community with them in their journey, or a group of people, is a much better way of looking at things to make sure that it is something that, you know, is actually what people need and can be sustainable and can make a real difference, rather than the short term fix of tick, solve that problem and move on. I think we've got examples of it, but that kind of innovative thinking of, oh yeah, let's have a conversation with the community, that shouldn't be innovative. Like, that should be the way that we're all doing things. And I'm really proud that we do that first, if that makes sense, and think in that way rather than designing a product and just chucking it in and leaving.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I found that out quite early in my career. And it took a 12-year-old lad in Somerton, Newport, to kind of highlight that to me. I went to a team meeting that we used to have. I think it was every other Tuesday or whatever it was. And all of the community sport officers got around the table. They share what was going well and perhaps what the challenges in the areas and different things like that. And I always remember Norman Pill was kind of sharing the project that he was doing around people with disabilities and specifically wheelchair users. And I went away and I thought, oh, that's a fantastic, fantastic project. The impact he had was great. I went back to the office in the community I was based in Somerton, started writing an application to develop this program for people with disabilities and specifically wheelchair users in the community. And it was about 4 o'clock and I was still going, trying to put this bid in, get it in by the Friday, so on and so forth. And a young lad came in and said, oh, are you playing football today with us? We had a coach outside on the field. And I was like, oh, I've got to finish this bid. I've got to finish this bid. I want to get it in. We're looking to develop something with wheelchair users in the community. And a 12-year-old kid just turned around to me and said, I don't think there is any. And I was like, ah, oh, right, okay, you sure? You sure? And he's like, yeah, yeah, no, nobody uses a wheelchair here in this community. It was a really kind of like close-knit community where everybody kind of knew everyone. And he was right. When I started asking questions, I just assumed that this would be something because it worked in a different area. But yeah, when I looked at kind of the barriers and kind of the people that in the community that we wanted to engage with, there just wasn't any of that demographic. So I was just completely wasting my time. I kind of shut the laptop down and went out to give a footy on the field with the youngsters. So yeah, that's always stuck with me. That's just because I didn't think about it. I just thought because it works in a different area, then it's going to work in this community, really. Yeah, and similar with walking groups. Where the community I was in, it was kind of surrounded by Chepstow Road, the one side, SDR the other side, but Betis, who had 14 locks and kind of mountains on the doorstep, they had a fantastic walking group. I couldn't get anybody to the walking group because nobody wanted to walk up the SDR or Chepstow Road. So yeah, those two things have really stuck with me for, well, the last 10-11 years really.
Yeah, definitely. And I was thinking about you know, growing up, and Claire, you mentioned innovation. I watched a TED talk the other day and it was talking about open innovation, and some of the best products or interventions have been designed by the consumer, the participant. And I was thinking probably that, you know, I wonder, was there a development team, you know, or a coach that actually introduced the game of Curbsy? Probably not. That was done by people in the community, that somebody had a ball and you wanted to try something different. And I think we need to really look at that and enhance that, I think, and support. And that's that community empowerment, isn't it? And that's an asset, I think, the fact that, you know, there are many different activities, sport that is played that hasn't been driven by a team of people or a person or a coach, actually. It's come from the individuals themselves, which, yeah.
It's something that has always, there's always stuck with me, and like, keep it simple is I guess nearly every meeting that I've been involved in the last few years, the full circle is just, let's just keep this simple. And even when, and that's so true to engagement with communities, just keep things simple. I remember I used to visit my grandmother every Thursday, you know, go up, share what I was doing with work. And I can remember one particular evening I went and visited her, and I was just sharing just a few challenges that I'd faced when I was working in the communities across Newport. And she said something to me that stuck with me and will probably stick with me for the rest of my career. And she said, I don't understand why they need people like you to get people to play sport. I don't get it. Like, she said, back in my day, we never had people like you. We just used to get on with it. Like, we used to talk to our neighbours. We used to come together as a community, and she used to come, you know, for her in particular, it was the church community, or my grandfather, because he was a docker. You know, he used to come together with the works community. So those the communities within the community existed, but they took ownership. And it did make, from that moment on, it made me wonder, like, what responsibility do we need to take that we don't over-design, that we don't over-complicate, we don't make things so fancy and so polished that actually it's got a limited shelf life? What is it we need to do to keep it simple with communities and make sure that we present the opportunities with them, not to them, so that there's a little bit of longevity. And it's not always going to have like exist for another 10, 15, 20 years. But actually, in my view, just that one idea that's owned by the community might enthuse some of those participants or beneficiaries to go off and do something else. So there is we talk about exit routes all the time, and we have done, like, what's the exit route? Well, sometimes we can't tell people what the exit route is, because our sector has got no way of tracking and following every participant for every step they make, every hour of the day, for every day of the year. It's just, we've got to keep it really simple, and make sure that the communities are thought of as a strong community within communities. There are people, they're better connected, our communities, I think, than perhaps the more affluent communities. Everyone knows everyone. Everyone supports everyone. Everyone will do things for everyone. Everyone probably is sharing information, whether it's on one particular street or one area of the community with another area of the community. Like, it just buzzes on its own. But I think sometimes we educate ourselves with the start of disadvantaged, underserved. So therefore we're starting with the deficit. So we've just got to make sure we keep things really simple, I think, when we're engaging with communities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think COVID has highlighted that further as well, with the pandemic, with these communities that we're talking about, the impoverished communities, the poorest communities. When kind of COVID hit and kind of people were unsure what going on, these communities kind of knotted together like nothing I've seen before, really. They were helping each other out. They were kind of loaning food. They were kind of sharing everything. I mean, like, when they really, really needed it, these communities really, really got together and helped each other out. And a story I'd share, there was in the Abertrudu Facebook group, as it goes, and young mum posted that she lost her milk money when she was down the shop and different things like that. Has anybody seen it? Within half an hour, you had about 100 people offering to donate milk, donate money. What can I do? Can I go to the shop for you? And different things like that. Just the closeness of these communities is definitely a plus. And talk about community cohesion, then these communities, they've definitely got that in spades, really. So that's definitely something to celebrate as well.
Yeah, and I think you're right there, Lee, in terms of like COVID has really highlighted some of these community responses. And I think like in the middle of it all is whatever the response was what the community needed quickly from day one of being shut in our houses in lockdown and all of that. People rallied round, and we've got tons and tons of examples, haven't we, of where sports coaches have turned into homework deliverers or food bank providers and delivery services so quickly, because that's exactly what the community needed right there and then. It wasn't a blanket one size fits all apply here for this in a central pot. It was this community, this couple of streets, this estate, whatever, really rallying around, like you just said there, Lee, to just support this is what the community needs. And there's no reason why that approach can't be taken to sport and physical activity and kind of getting people moving, getting people active, and really highlighting, showcasing, adding value, whatever term you want to put on it, to what may already be happening. But because it's not in a pathway or on a website somewhere to click and attend, the sector might not know about it or fund it or accredit it or whatever. But I'd bet you my house that there's hundreds of sessions and activities and stuff going on in communities. They're exactly what the community needs, but no one is, I guess, prescribing it like this is what it needs to look like and here's what time the coach is going to turn up and here's who does the register. But it's still meaningful and it's still what the young people or community or whoever needs, I think.
Yeah, and it was amazing, you know what I think, when everyone sort of paused that hour out of the house or wherever, that walk of that day was really highlighted to people that, you know, physical activity and sport in whatever manner that is to you actually is really important. And I think a lot of the communities definitely showed that, you know, we talk about activity know-how, but actually there was lots of families, lots of young people that had a bit of equipment, probably have never been part of a tennis club or a rugby club, but actually they did activity with that equipment. And, you know, there was lots of stuff we saw on social media and lots of stories that Lee had around they didn't need to be, you know, attend a club. They didn't necessarily need to attend a doorstep sport club at that point, or be taught. They just needed that little bit of equipment, and away they went with it. And that was, you know, a really good positive for them. So again, I think that was something that really kind of highlighted throughout COVID.
I got a question, really. Are we allowed a question in a podcast, or do we just have to just keep talking? Good. Because I got a question. Question really is, what if there were no rules? What if we could do? What if, I guess, not just us, because this engagement, this work doesn't, Street Games doesn't own it. Like, what if there were no rules? What if we could say, and I know it does exist, but what if we said, right, red tape, bureaucracy doesn't exist? What would we be saying and challenging and supporting with in that respect? So, like, for example, and I know we've done a lot of this, and I know other organisations have as well. What if there was a challenge around the way that investment models work? Like, what if we really committed hard to investing into the communities and said, there's an idea, here's an idea, community, here's a load of money, make it work. No rules, no guidance, just make it work. Get people buzzing, enjoying activity. What do we think?
Hasn't that been done before? So a couple of projects where they've kind of given big amounts of cash to community groups and the autonomy's there, design your own programs. Hasn't that happened before?
Through sport?
More community development, I think I'd say. Yeah, not necessarily sport, but yeah, it's a good question. And
my thoughts on it, from certainly from the Talent ID pilot that we did, is that there's still that extra layer. So Lee, where you spoke about that community group, that's still that sort of organization. I don't know how this could be done, but if there was no rules, blue sky thinking, if those individuals could receive, you know, resource support, for me, that would be amazing. I think we touched a little bit of it through COVID, so the giving out of equipment, and we touched on it with the Talent ID project of funding, you know, support to some young people around their next step, and they kind of supporting, I don't want to call it pathway because we know that that's the thing, but, you know, the next step in their kind of sporting journey, I suppose. And for me, I think 100% that would just allow some of these young people, families, individuals, that freedom to really explore what sport and physical activity can look like for them. So 100%, if we're not starting from a deficit and there was no rules, I'd say let's give some time, resource to these people individually, and take out all the layers, like take out the, you know, the layers of community organisations or sport organisations, or, you know, let's just directly to that community and to those individuals. Oh, I'd love to see how that would work.
I think if there were no rules, no boxes to fit into, none of that, that bloody hell, how exciting would that end product be? Because, like, we don't have all of the ideas, do we? Let's be honest. Like, we've got some good ones, but they're not the right ones all of the time. And if there's nothing, no boundaries, how exciting could that look about a community approach to being active? No labels, no nothing. Using what's right there and the environment or the spaces or the buildings or whatever, that would just be so exciting and actually more innovative than any product developer or group discussion could come up with that isn't there. I think we'd come up with that. I think they would come up with so many different ways to move and be active and all the benefits around it. It'd be brilliant.
Yeah, and it's just an interesting thinking and concept, really, because, like, where it has happened before, Lee, it's come with rules, it's come with outputs, targets, performance measures. Here's a pot of money, this is what we want to see. So to a certain degree, it's prescribed.
Yeah.
Because people end up designing programs so that they meet those outcomes that need to be reported back here, there, or everywhere. And it would be interesting to say, to I think, just go. And there are some, there's the Building Communities Trust funding, I think, that comes to the lottery at the moment. It's an endowment fund that, you know, pretty much goes to the community and says, here's a lot of money for 10 years. Do what's best for the community with it. Like, how good is that? Like, why aren't we doing more of that? I asked myself, like, what a really long-term investment, 10 years. You know, what a great, great way to really allow those communities to thrive, really make them feel that actually we can do something from within this community here, and nobody's coming to us with all of the answers. And you hear it quite a lot. And I felt this at times when people come in from outside of my community and telling me what I need. Like, quite often you probably feel like, jog on. Like, what do you know about what we need in our community whilst you're sat in your wherever you live over there? So it'd just be interesting, I think, to say, well, what if we just went to a community and said, like, here's a pot of money, do what you want with it? Where would that get us?
I think I've had time to digest that, definitely, if you were to give a community, say, £100,000, don't fill out a form now. Let us know what you've achieved in a year's time for that £100,000. Like you said, it'd take a bold funder, but I think you definitely get some good outcomes in that one. Because like you said, they can decide it locally. They can make it sure it works. And then, don't tell us what you're going to do at the start. Tell us what you've done at the end. And I think, we'll have to lobby for that, we will.
Well, no, exactly.
Any funders listening want to take a punt, then get in touch.
But that's the thing, really, around what I was talking about earlier, about keeping things simple. Like, I know that it's really tricky particularly when we're managing public funds, and we have to have some sort of, like, there needs to be a process, a part of it. But equally, if we want to make the greatest difference to, I guess, people who live in Wales, in the communities, particularly the young people and families that we care about in underserved communities, we've got to think differently. And thinking differently doesn't mean thinking more complex and being cocky about it and coming up with all these polished products, programs. You know, sometimes it's just keeping it simple. One of the most rewarding things I've done in my career was, and this is going back like 20 years, when we sat in a room, when I was working for Positive Futures in Newport, we sat in a room and said, well, what if we went out to these communities and we got a few of them together and we got them on a sports leaders course? Now, back then, a sports leaders course had never been run, particularly across Newport, for a group of young people from the community. Most of the time it'd been run to the school setting. So we spoke to Rob Guy at Sports Leaders and said, could we do this? He'd be like, yeah, you can do it. Sent us on the training. Went up to Bilth Wells. I think we just about got through one of my mates who was driving all the snow, and then came back. And I think we started with 20 candidates from across the four communities that was part of the Positive Futures program, and finished with about 6, 7, 8. But what was really brilliant about that, when you think back to it, we kept it really simple. We engaged with the kids. We booked the hall out. We drove around in the morning, picked them all up, like knocking on doors, getting them out of bed. Come on, we've got to start. We built a relationship with the families, parents, said, like, you know, this will be really good for them. And actually, of those kids that went through that course, one of them still works in community development now, has a role in it. One of them, an academy coach at football club. One of them became a professional in his particular sport. One of them is working with that lad who was his cousin. So and back then, when we mentioned that in the room, it was like, what are we going to do? We're going to get a load of kids and bring them in a room and run a sports leaders course. And that happens all the time, all across the country, all the time, every day of the week now, probably. But for us back then, that was a really simple idea that was kind of like, well, that'll never work. And it did, because it continued then for years after, you know, across Newport in particular. I know other authorities would do it now and have been doing it for years as well, but such a simple idea to, you know, work hard. Was it, they say, like, this, the easiest part of our engagement is get a bag of balls or whatever equipment it is you've got and get your ass out in the community and engage. Simple as that. It doesn't need to be more difficult.
I tell you what though, when we talk about assets, young people, every time I'm on a call, every time I meet young people at projects, I just feel really good. I just think when we talk about assets, we've got some really amazing young people in these communities that, like you said, Paul, they might just need that little bit of an opportunity, or they might just need some direction or somebody to back them. We've got lots of young people that are the best community activators in, you know, and I'm sure she won't mind me mentioning, but early up in Aberaeron, in West Wales, and some of the community engagement that she's done off her own back, and necessarily haven't got, you know, specific coaching qualifications, might have even been too young to get those specific qualifications years ago. But actually, when you talk about community activation and understanding, and, you know, that Ellie's not just one, we've got so many across Wales and the UK that I just feel like, you know, and we see some organisations now, and I love to see a, you know, Plan UK have a funding pot out that young people can directly apply for. And those kinds of approaches just, you know, make me feel like this is the right direction to help and support them moving forward.
Definitely, Laura, 100% agree with that. And I think coming back to Robbo's question in terms of if the gloves were off, if the restrictions were kind of lifted, in terms of volunteers, I don't think we appreciate them enough. And I know, I think I posed a question in our Street Games WhatsApp group a few months back that I think somebody tweeted around that if a volunteer gives up their time to come on a focus group or have some consultation or do some great work, instead of rewarding them with a £10 Amazon voucher or a voucher in terms of what we think, why don't we give them £10 cash? Why do we give them £10 cash and then they can go away and decide what they want to do with that money for helping? And I know, like you said, that there's ethical stuff there and safeguarding stuff to think about, but I'm sure they value that a lot more, because for some young person, that focus group that they've sat in for 2 hours, that £10 that we've given them could go and help mum and dad stock the fridge for the younger children, or it could, yeah, they could go and put some money towards a pair of shoes that they want. So I think we just need to reward them in the right way. And yeah, just something to think about. If, for me, if we could and the restrictions allowed, then I'd be chucking them that cash so they could decide what they want to do, rather than a Just Eat voucher or an Amazon voucher, which I've seen loads of organisations doing across the COVID period. So yeah, just something to think about.
Yeah, that youth voice bit is so important, especially when we're talking about, like, the work that we do is predominantly around young people, and thinking about getting the views and the opinions and the ideas and the I guess catalyst coming from young people, there's no better way of engaging other young people. You know, I said it already, but we don't know the answers. We're not young people anymore, as much as we like to think we are. We're not. And I guess that empowerment bit, yeah, I know, sorry, getting on now. That empowerment bit, and that, like, giving young people the option and the opportunity to really make a difference in their community is massive. Like you've mentioned earlier there, Laura, I think we could probably all name another 10, 20, 30 young people that we've engaged or encountered over the years that one opportunity sparked their interest and sparked their path on a different way, that if we don't listen to them, I can't stand it when we don't, or the sector doesn't, or organisations don't. That voice bit is just massive in this space.
I totally agree. So just 2 points, really. When young people, regardless of where they're from, are proud of where they're from, more often than not, more often than not, they're proud of where they're from. And when you can empower them to work with their peers, regardless of where they're from, and give them some resources to make their ideas come to life, like the catalyst that creates for other young people is phenomenal. One of the things I think, particularly with the communities that we work with, and I know you guys know that I talk about this a lot, is when we work properly with these communities and go out and find the right young people or right people, you find young people that you might not find through the mainstream, like, audiences. So a lot of my experience, particularly running those courses in communities, The first time it happened to me, I was quite surprised. And then after that, I wasn't. Once we'd run a course, the kids went back. We used to run them in the summer holidays. The kids went back to school. And I had a school teacher ring me and said, this young person's told me they've just got their sports leaders qualification from you. I said, all right, yeah. I said, why are you ringing me? He said, well, I'm not sure I believe it. I said, well, actually, he did. And he's one of the best leaders that the community could wish for. And I didn't have one or two of those calls. There was plenty of them that came from, you know, mainstream environments or audiences where perhaps that young person doesn't particularly thrive in. But what's really valuable about the communities they live in is they care about it. And actually, if you give them the right tools, give them the right resources, you know, trust them, allow them to fail, allow them to take risks, allow them to work with others, and allow them to come up with the wackiest of ideas. What that does for that young person and other young people and the community in terms of getting kids active is phenomenal, phenomenal. And those Pied Pipers will quite often come from places that aren't, you won't find in the mainstream environment, because they won't put themselves forward, or they won't be recognised as the one that should be put forward. So what the empowerment of young people is brilliant and matters to all young people. But I think particularly with the approach of keeping it simple in communities and going out and finding those young people and giving young people a chance, is you'll find young people that perhaps you might not always find in the mainstream environment.
Definitely. Sorry, as you were saying that, a story popped in my head then from kind of my primary school days. And I think I was in year 5 or year 6, Miss Statton's class in Lansbury Park Juniors. And if you were good, you used to get a gold star, but you'd also get a raffle ticket that went in a box. Christmas time, then Miss Statton drew the raffle ticket out. And if it was your number, then she got that child a prize. And I always remember it was one of my mates, he picked a pair of trainers. So she came in the next day, gave him the pair of trainers. He took them home. He was absolutely buzzing, brand new white trainers. The next day, his mum came marching into the classroom, dragging him by his hand. Give them back to whoever you took them off. She thought he'd nicked the pair of trainers from somebody in the school. And you had to give them back. And everyone was just like, what's going on here? But then we had to explain, no, it was a reward for doing something positive. And like I said, the mum didn't even like realise that child had that in him. And I just saw it just popped into my head then as you were telling that story. And yeah, it's how we can get the professionals, whatever you want to call them, to value the impact that these young people can have. And yeah, sorry to go off on a tangent, but yeah.
It's right. And it's about, for me, it's about timing as well. I just feel like everything, whether we talk about sport or other things that go on in kind of our life, it just seems to be that, like, this timeline that's in place, that, you know, you do your exams, you pick what career you want. If you were in sport, you have a pathway that we're, you know, supposed to follow. We talk about, you know, lifelong participation, but what does that look like? I know for me, I would class myself as active. I've still had periods in my life where I've maybe not done sport or maybe dropped out because of various things that have happened in my life. And I think we should see this as a positive, that we might not be able to track, there might not be a linear journey for everyone, but surely that's the positive, and we should see that as, and this goes back to me around some of the young people that we talked about, actually there might be that one thing that is really positive that might, you know, turn the tide for them. And, you know, I'm sure we've all experienced that at some point. But yeah, just seeing all this as a real positive, and I think it goes back to the point around impact as well. You know, how good would it be if we could just record it once everything's done and what the community says is needed rather than the other way around. But yeah.
Yeah, really good points. So I'm going to try and bring us to a bit of a close, because we could talk about this for days, but we haven't got days. We've got less than an hour. So I'm going to chuck a question just so that people listening to this can take something away and kind of something for them to think about. But we understand this way of working, and it's kind of ingrained in us at Street Games. It's what we do. It's the way we work. So for anyone that this is perhaps a different or a new way of thinking, what advice would we be giving to them about how do you approach this? Like, where do you start thinking about an asset-based approach or kind of the positive coming from within a community? What advice would we be giving to, as someone to start for someone that wants to maybe do something different in this space?
I'd say go and speak to people, go and speak to the community, go and speak to young people. Share what you're thinking and what you think the ideas, the landscape should be. Share those thoughts with people, not necessarily the people that you're already engaged with, but maybe some different audiences. And just be open to understanding and learning. I think for me, I've engaged with, you know, some community groups which are completely different world to what I've grown up in. But I think one thing that's always, you know, I've tried to stay true to is just learning and understanding and not thinking that what I know is right, and sharing what I think, and if it's wrong, taking that into consideration. So for me, it's that, I don't like to call it consultation because that formalizes it, but for me it's just go and speak to people, go and share what you're thinking. Exactly what Lee said, you know, if you're thinking about a project in a certain community, go and find out what the thoughts are, and be open to learning.
Yeah, definitely echo that around kind of don't assume you know what's right for these communities. Even if you're from the community yourself, I mean, your thoughts are going to be your individual thoughts, really. And I think those perceptions, again, the individual perceptions, really. So yeah, I agree, shouldn't call it consultation, but go have a cup of tea with them, go have a coffee or something a bit stronger if that's what gets you, that's what gets you in the door and gets you a bit of street cred with the families and stuff. But yeah, definitely just go ask them what they want to do. But if you do commit to something, make sure you follow it up, because these communities remember. If you perhaps drop off or you don't come to that session because you've got something else to do. So if you're going to go in and do a 10-week intervention to start the build rapport Tuesday to Friday, Tuesday 5 till 6, then make sure you're there for those 10 weeks, Tuesday 5 till 6, because they'll remember. So yeah, and then definitely build those relationships are key as well. So just one last example for me is I don't know if it's right or wrong, I should share this, but I think Robin knows this story. When I was their community sport officer in the community, I started a poker league for the dads, and I had a kind of bit of animosity at the start of it. Poker league, you shouldn't be doing that, encouraging gambling, blah 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 blah. It wasn't paying for money, it was chips, it was just to get a relationship with the dads. First week we had about 15 dads there eager to get into the cards and start playing and doing things like that. That's the best thing I ever done to engage and get respect from those dads. If I had any issues then on behavior from the children, I'm seeing your dad on Monday night for poker. Sorry. I'm just try something new as well. Like, so don't be afraid, don't overplan, just start going. But yeah, ask them what they want to do. If they wanted to get together in the community center, the mums went to bingo on a Thursday, so why couldn't the dads go and play poker in the community center on a Monday? So yeah, don't be afraid to try nothing new. Keep it consistent, build those relationships, and don't assume anything.
It's ironic that I'm going to say this now, but this work isn't a desk job. So get out of, if you like, the shiny polished office. If you've got one of them or whatever your office looks like, get out. You can't do it from a desk coming up with, oh, I've got a good idea, this will work in that community. Chances are, if you do it like that, I don't think it'll work. If it does, then there's a good bit of learning in there that we need to try and get from and share across. So that's the first thing, is get out and, you know, don't see it as a desk job. The second bit, and it'd be wrong for me not to say this, given I've said it a few times in the call, is keep it simple. Like, you're complex. If you're thinking complex, shiny products, I think they got a shelf life, if I'm honest. So keep it simple. Engage and then empower. So Lauren and Lee have said it, but I'll say it again because I think it's key, is just engage. Like, go with those people. Talk to those people. Understand what is it that they see as positives that they can harness and work on to make things happen, and then empower them. Like, don't do it to them, don't get all their ideas off them and say, oh, look what we've got, or look what you could have had. Like, get their ideas and say, oh, here we go and do it, here we got some resource, we got some support for you, tell us what you need from us, not what I need from you. And then the final bit, Lee's touched on this, is be reliable, but be patient. Like, definitely in our, the communities that we work with, you know, there's a lot of learning to be taken out of any one single, you know, intervention or idea or thing that comes out of the community. And it doesn't always work first time round. So don't, once it, if it doesn't work first time round, don't stop. That's the bit about reliability. We've got to keep going back and supporting these communities. If we give up too easy, how are we meant to, you know, even give them any sort of chance in being more active and having more chance of accessing sport and then benefiting from all the benefits that come from being involved in sport? I've lost count the number of times we try that, not just sport, but all other sectors, try something and it doesn't work and that's it, we get out. That's no way to support and engage and empower these communities, is it? If it doesn't work, go back, keep going back and keep going back. And then I think we'll start to make good progress.
Brilliant. Well, what's left for me to say? You've all covered brilliant points there. And I guess for me, it's about that open-mindedness and that curiosity of trying to find things out that are new and really reaching out to find out who the right people are to engage with within that community. As Lee was saying there, the examples with the dads, like who is the right person to get on board and to find things out from and to build that trust and relationship up with and then build from there. The biggest bit for me that I've learned over the years, and you've all said it in one way or another, but is about building trust. That consistency bit is massive. Don't say you're going to do something and then never come back. Or as you've just said there, Robbo, get everybody's ideas and then badge it up as yours or things like that. That kind of trust and following through on what you say is huge. And I guess that bit about just being willing to try something different, and if it fails, it fails. Learn from it. Go back. Do it again. Do it differently. Find out. Laugh about it. But do it with, not to, is the biggest message from me. So gonna put it right to a close now, and thanks for listening. But has anyone else got any final points that they just want to say before we say goodbye? Anyone else?
I guess for me, it's just to round it up on that, within these communities across Wales, there are so many positives. You know, we've covered a lot of them today, but there are so many, like Lee just said, you know, in terms of the connection that he's experienced, the young people that I've come across have absolutely blown me away. You know, we've all just shared amazing experiences, and yeah, we shouldn't be seeing these communities from a deficit, but actually so many positives. And if you're not engaged with a community at the moment, just get out and go and speak to some people and see the positives for yourself.
Definitely. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Last thing for me, that personally, it's so rewarding when you get it right as well. So like you said, we don't get it right all the time, but when we do get it right, then like you said, these communities do appreciate the support as well. I think more so than some of the affluent communities, just because people invest the time in them. So yeah, when you get it right, it's so individually rewarding for you as well. Actually, one of those dads that I did a poker with about 11 years ago, I was down Porth Court Park in the car the other day, and he went over and gave me his car parking ticket. So it must have had a lasting impact, and I had free parking for the day as well. So happy days.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, it's, I believe I work in the best part. I work in the best sector in the world, and I work within the best part of this sector, trying to do what we can for people and communities. I guess I probably just got two questions really that don't need answering amongst ourselves, but hopefully those who are listening could go away and think about, is this is all a collective effort. It has to be. If we do it individually, nothing will work. And I know we keep using this word collaboration, like it's happening all the time. So I guess there's a question really for me, that particularly for where people on this will be listening in Wales, is where else in the world can we learn from? Because we do a lot of learning amongst ourselves, which is really good. But where else across the world could we learn that communities who are facing hardship or are underserved are doing really good things through their community to get people active, So that's the first question, is where else can we learn? And then that kind of leads to the second question, is how can Wales be the best in the world at closing this gap? What is it that we could do collectively that makes Wales a, you know, a place that the rest of the world wants to learn from and with? So, yeah, two pretty big questions for people to think about.
And I'm going to stop us there before we all jump in and answer those questions. So thanks for listening. And if you want a further conversation, or if we can do anything to help, then please just get in touch with Street Games. And we'd love to grab a coffee soon. Thanks very much.